The following program, The Inclusive Voice, is sponsored by Diversity MBA Media and, to the extent applicable, their guests. The views and opinions expressed therein do not necessarily reflect those of NewsWeb Radio Company or its management.
The world is embracing a remote, globalized, and diverse workforce. Is your organization prepared when it comes to understanding all the nuances of diversity? Diversity MBA can help. From an industry-leading journal and web publication highlighting professionals and best practices, to boot camps and conferences featuring noted and accomplished speakers, Diversity MBA is a driving force in diversity, equity, and inclusion education. Check out DiversityMBAMagazine.com and take the first step towards transforming your organization. From an industry-leading journal and web publication highlighting professionals and best practices to boot camps and conferences featuring noted and accomplished speakers, Diversity MBA is a driving force in diversity, equity, and inclusion education. But Diversity MBA's education push extends beyond the public realm and into the private sector. Thanks to DMBA, enterprises embarking on their DEI journey have access to training webinars, leadership indexes, and more, all of which can help educate and transform a workforce. Embrace DEI. Diversity MBA can help. Visit www.diversitymbamagazine.com for more information.
At UPMC, we believe care goes beyond our walls and into our communities. That's why we support organizations and individuals who help people prosper by giving them skills and training for employment, including right here at UPMC. Because life-changing is providing people a chance to grow. Learn more at upmc.com/community impact. UPMC, life-changing medicine.
Good morning. I'm Pam McElvain, your host for The Inclusive Voice. What we have for you this morning is, as you remember, our new segment on diversity news. The one thing I want to talk to you about today is we've been following some of the employment law issues that's been going on. The New York Times actually recently reported on an unfair and unusual labor practice case brought against by the ACLU. By the National Labor Relations Board, which has accused the organization of retaliating, if you can imagine, against Karen O. Ms. O was terminated by the ACLU, not for the use of racial slurs, but instead used language that described her African-American supervisors as aggressive, an assessment they found to be unfair and racially charged. So Ms. O, on the other hand, believes her termination was the result of being outspoken about sexism and unfair treatment in the workplace. And what's kind of ironic with this issue is the ACLU is there as a liberal organization, is to support open expression. But at this point, microaggressions being subtle and often intentional acts of discrimination can be challenging to prove as the sole reason for termination in legal context. However, there have been cases where termination or workplace discrimination lawsuits have involved allegations of microaggressions, among other factors. So it's essential to know that while these cases involve allegations of discrimination and hostile work environments, proving termination, only can be due to a microaggression can be legally challenging. And we've heard this from many civil rights attorneys as well. But laws regarding discrimination and harassment vary by jurisdiction, and legal standards for proving such claims may differ accordingly. And one of the reasons we wanted to bring this particular issue forward in diversity news is to share how microaggressions are somewhat common within the workplace, and as mentioned earlier, unintentional in terms of when people are actually speaking them. And that's where the increased awareness, training, learning, enhancements on behaviors become very, very important and imperative for us to know. So today we hope to speak a little bit more about what's happening within our civil rights discrimination and different things around the laws, what we can do to hopefully mitigate that and be increase our own awareness as it relates to that. So thank you for listening and being a part this morning. Go grab your coffee. As I always said, I know it's a little gloomy here in Chicago and we hope for it to get a little better. And I'm going to be right back with you after this brief commercial break. I'm Pam McElvain, your host with The Inclusive Voice. Please feel free to call in. Tell me your thoughts at 773-763-9278. We'll be right back with you.
The world is embracing a remote, globalized, and diverse workforce. Is your organization prepared when it comes to understanding all the nuances of diversity? Diversity MBA can help. From an industry-leading journal and web publication highlighting professionals and best practices, to boot camps and conferences featuring noted and accomplished speakers, Diversity MBA is a driving force in diversity, equity, and inclusion education. Check out DiversityMBAMagazine.com and take the first step towards transforming your organization.
At UPMC, we believe care goes beyond our walls and into our communities. That's why we support organizations and individuals who help people prosper by giving them skills and training for employment, including right here at UPMC. Because life-changing is providing people a chance to grow. Learn more at upmc.com/community impact. UPMC, life-changing medicine.
Breakthroughs aren't just for medical journals. They're to help people hold their grandbabies for the first time. Expertise isn't just for awards or recognition. It can be what gives people the best chance to walk again. At the Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network, people are the driving force behind everything we do. So we never lose sight of what's important. And we never forget who it's for. Because in the end, we're people helping people. That means every breakthrough, every clinical study, every interaction is to help people like you, your family, and your neighbors be the best they can be. We do everything possible because we see everything possible in you. To find out how compassion motivates world-class care, visit Frederick.com.
From emails that get no response, to improper billing and shipping, to inventory mistakes, waste can be an expansive, encompassing problem. With a track record of success that includes over $7 billion in successful projects, Bold Business has been helping clients over two decades. Whether you seek to enhance the performance of current anti-waste and waste initiatives, reduce reputational damage in the face of heightened public scrutiny, or simply safeguard cost efficiency, Bold Business has the answers. Check out boldbusiness.com for more information.
Welcome back. Good morning. This is Pam McElvain. I am your host for The Inclusive Voice. So good to have you again with me this morning. I know you just heard from me from our diversity news talking about the recent ACLU by the National Labor Relations Board, what was going on there. So joining me this morning, which I'm so excited about, we have with us Cyrus, I may beat up his last name, but Cyrus Mayrie. He's an acclaimed civil rights attorney who has served as co-lead of class counsel for some of the most significant race and gender cases in the United States, with notable innovations and reforms, including at iconic companies such as Texaco, Coke, Ford, Morgan Stanley, Wachovia, and many, many more. And actually also is one of the co-authors of the Rooney Rule. And we'll talk a little bit about that, but I know you've heard much about the Rooney Rule and what's going on. But the first thing I'd like to do is welcome Cyrus, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Pam, and good morning, listeners. It's a privilege to be here on this program.
So one of the things I ask Cyrus to my guest each week is, you know, what do you do to keep yourself well, both mentally and physically?
Oh, that's such an awesome question. My wife and I have a Norwich Terrier, and we take him out on beautiful walks. We live in Washington, D.C., and there are a lot of national parks right within the city that are underutilized, so we usually go in there. That was really helpful during COVID, and we started to discover new and more expansive places. I'm also an avid NFL pro football fan. My wife always teases me about that, but you know, Sundays I break out time to watch at least one game. And but most of the time, you know, I'm working. You know, we have co-founded Marion Scalet, a civil rights and complex litigation law firm, the consulting company Working Ideal that does a lot of innovative DEI consulting, and co-founded Fritz Pollard Alliance that has, you know, championed the Rooney Rule within the NFL and been kind of a moral compass of the National Football League. So between those three things, I'm pretty much going 7 days a week.
Well, you know what? I'd like to, this is the first time I've heard about the walk, which is great. And that is a way you need to do shut down. And yes, and thank you for, you know, setting up a nice framework for us to have our conversation this morning. We, just so you know, we just launched this new segment right after the news on the show that we wanted to take an issue and bring that diversity perspective to it. And so one of the things that I, as you heard earlier, that I was talking about with ACLU, who actually had a case against the National Labor Relations Board based on a microaggressions issue, where one of the employees, you know, felt that an Asian woman felt that black her black supervisors were aggressive and assertive, and they were actually terminated, and she got terminated for the language she used. And so it's kind of, you know, kind of ironic that here's an organization that supports open expression. And if someone, you know, has a microaggression and misuses language, that they're fired, you know, versus, you know, supported and educated in awareness. So I almost just feel, and, you know, I'm just going to say it, in this Trump environment, where people aren't respecting each other, that, you know, their actions that are occurring, I think, much faster. They're accelerated when before we'd have a little more tolerance. So as a, you know, civil rights attorney, I know in your experience, particularly, you know, in defending many, many cases, you know, sometimes when people do, you know, speak out of turn in the workplace, do you think we've moved away from being able to have some empathy to help folks, you know, become more respectful and providing them the tools of that? You know, what are your thoughts about unconscious bias and people actually getting terminated for it?
Well, it's a fascinating conversation. I did read the New York Times article on the ACLU. You know, it's a large organization, done amazing work over the years. And it's hard to run a big, complex organization. I think they have hundreds of lawyers. But in terms of the issue of workplace, I always try to remind people that you're not in your living room. You're not at home. You are in a workplace. So the word choices you make, the statements you make, the stories you tell, you have to be mindful of the, a lot of different perspectives and, you know, people with different backgrounds in your organization. And so, you know, I think that's just part of kind of coaching a little bit, leaders of organizations. But, you know, it's hard to know in that what exactly is going on with that particular case. So I don't really want to comment on that one, but being thoughtful in the workplace among your colleagues is really important to give everyone a sense of belonging giving everyone a sense that their voices are heard. I run complex cases with lawyers from different offices and firms. And, you know, I always, for example, try to make sure some of the younger lawyers' voices are heard. And often they're women, young lawyers, and they may think, well, they don't have something to add to the conversation. I'm like, yes, you do. I want to hear your perspective on things. So it's all about management.
Thank you. And that's really what I wanted you to share. I didn't want you to comment on that case, but just to kind of your perspective. And I think you brought it forward very well. And particularly, you know, where there was a time when we wanted to be sensitive, right? And we wanted to help, you know, train leaders more. It just says that we have to continue to do that. But let's get back to your career. I mean, oh my goodness, what an illustrious career. But let me just ask you, what kind of motivated you? Tell us a little bit about your background, you know, where you went to school and what motivated you to go into law, and then not just law, but to move into civil rights.
Well, I'm son of immigrants. My parents came from Iran. My dad came in, believe it or not, like the late 40s, like 1947, from Iran when he was 17 years old. He and his brother, and together, their father was a judge in Iran. And in the 40s, during World War II, the U.S. occupied Iran to keep the Russians out. And my grandfather was asked by a U.S. colonel, can you have your sons, who are, you know, top students, translate documents? So they started doing that. And then the colonel said to my grandfather, why don't you send your boys to America to get educated? So at 17, they arrived. They heard that the most beautiful women in America are in New Orleans. And so they went to LSU, not realizing that Baton Rouge is not New Orleans. But anyway, they made it. And my dad went on to become a doctor, ophthalmologist, and an eye surgeon. And he became probably the longest serving ophthalmologist in U.S. history. First time he checked someone's eyes, he's at WashU in St. Louis. He's 22. And the last time he did it was 92, just a couple weeks before he passed away. But he went back to Iran in the late 50s after getting his medical degree and fell in love with my mother, who had her own interesting story. Her father was someone who fought for constitutional democracy in Iran. And then she became kind of a leader of education in Iran and supported people going to the West to learn, you know, France, U.S., what have you. And my mother went to American University in Beirut, which was the preeminent university in the Middle East. And while she was there, 18 years old student, you know, she would talk among her friends about that Iran, you know, should have a democracy and was critical of the Shah. Little did she know that the secret police for Iran was embedded within her environment at that university. And they, because my mother was outspoken, she didn't organize any protests or things, but she expressed her views. Talk about ACLU and her views. She expressed her views. They documented everything she was saying. And when she got back, maybe after her sophomore year, they put her on a travel ban, that she wasn't allowed to leave the country and she wasn't allowed to complete her education. So apparently these newlyweds, my parents, wanted to come to the U.S. and establish their lives here. But this travel ban was in place on my mother. So my dad went to all these different government entities up and down and this corner of that place, finally made it into this, like, a place in, like, a down the stairs and got into dungeon, his last stop. And he went in there, and they had a file on him. There was just, like, one page, name, rank, serial number. And then they said, here's what we have on your wife. It was stacks of papers, like, 3-4 feet tall, of everything they documented about her speaking out.
Wow.
But they agreed to let her go. And so they flew to Canada and came over from Canada to the U.S. and established their lives here. But with that background, you can see why my parents so cherish freedom that we have in the U.S., the ability to send their children to get an education, something that my mother was deprived of, although she did end up becoming a very nice, a very good artist and did complete education in the U.S., but to have a ban on travel and education is, pretty dehumanizing. Came here with these cherished values. It's 1960, the Kennedy era of idealism, the civil rights movement. And so I kind of grew up in an environment that really deeply, profoundly cherished American ideals, but also recognized the tragic issue of race in America. The caste system that we've built in America. So they didn't see the country as a perfect country. But my mother would take me, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, I just feel that you're just basically explaining it and sharing how your history and what's led you to where you are. And, so when you talk about environmental, really does influence what you do and what you choose to do. And just an incredible background and story. And thank you for sharing both sides, in terms of your grandfather and your father and their story, and then your mother's journey, and then how they come together to provide that.
Right.
So we're gonna take a quick commercial break, Cyrus, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
I want to talk a little bit more about the Rooney Rule and the diverse slates and the work you've done, and kudos to you for having parents of an immigrant that has made such an impact in this country. What a great, great story. So we'll be right back with you right after this break.
Don't let the tight labor market get in the way of your company's success. Open your mind to new ideas and open your enterprise to new workforce solutions. With Bold Business, companies can leverage extensive global assets and a lengthy track record of success in reducing labor costs. Don't let borders get in the way of giving your company the best possible workforce. For remote positions, Bold Business can save clients up to 30 to 50% with skilled and experienced candidates from a global talent pool. Head to boldbusiness.com for more information.
Breakthroughs aren't just for medical journals. They're to help people hold their grandbabies for the first time. Expertise isn't just for awards or recognition. It can be what gives people the best chance to walk again. At the Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network, people are the driving force behind everything we do. So we never lose sight of what's important, and we never forget who it's for. Because in the end, we're people helping people. That means every breakthrough, every clinical study, every interaction is to help people like you, your family, and your neighbors be the best they can be. We do everything possible because we see everything possible in you. To find out how compassion motivates world-class care, visit Frederick.com.
Welcome back. I'm Pam McElvain, your host of The Inclusive Voice, and I have with us our guest, Cyrus Mary. You heard that, the great story that he's had in terms of his journey here, but also, what I love is, how your family came, Cyrus, and actually, had impact and influence the work that you wanted to do. And that was one of the questions I was asking, but I think in your story, you actually shared the overall influence. about what's going on. But one of the things that I really wanted to talk to you about this morning and share with our audience, you know, over a couple decades ago, you actually, and with your passion with the NFL and football, but you actually, you know, co-authored and created the Rooney Rule. And I want to just talk about what that is and help our audience understand that. And then Trent, then we'll talk a little bit about, you know, what that means in corporate America and getting all the way to the impact of affirmative action and why we think and thought it was a good idea. But I like the idea of, you know, what is the Rooney Rule? What is the name? How did the name come about? And what was the intent? And what is the intent of it?
Sure. The intent of it is to bring an inclusive process about fair competition. You let the best compete and the best be selected for key positions. The phrase that is used in corporate America is diverse slates. But I think your audience might be intrigued a little bit about the origins of it. I was negotiating a settlement with Coca-Cola on behalf of African-American professionals and managers, and there was this glass ceiling, and they couldn't break through. And they deserved to break through and have a chance to compete for top positions. So I was trying to figure out an inclusive solution to level the playing field. When I came across an article by Clifford Alexander, the former Secretary of the Army under President Carter, and he told the story about how the Army brass gave him a list of colonels for the pipeline to general. And there was not a single person of color on that list. And he said to the Army brass, "You can't tell me there's not a single person of color who could become a general in the United States Army. Go back and do your homework." And they came back with Colin Powell. And forever American history was changed with that one moment. That one moment. And you think about the most esteemed public servant of in the military, the diplomat, the honorable person, completely overlooked. Until we got into the slate. So I took the diverse slate concept to Coke, and we put that in their settlement we had with them. And we were just in the beginning stages of getting that up and running with Coke and starting to get some success. And it was MLK Day on 2002. I know that's a long time ago. Maybe your listeners weren't even, were just children then or not born yet, but 22 years ago. We had a situation where as an NFL fan, I'm just like avidly following everything. And I started the day like I always did, started with the sports section. And I saw Coach Tony Dungy was fired even after he made miracles happen. What at that time was arguably the worst franchise in the league, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, took them to championship games, had a great defense, and they fired him. And that was on the heels of firing another preeminent black head coach, Dennis Green, with the Minnesota Vikings, who took their team to the playoffs 8 out of 10 years. And so I was like, you know, I wasn't happy about that. And I just had this epiphany, it's MLK Day, that I could take the tools that we use in our cases, civil rights cases, and apply that to the pro football head coaching position. And so, and then I enlisted Johnny Cochran, who I was working closely with at the time, and Dr. Janus Madden, the labor economist at University of Pennsylvania. And so the vision was, let's take the win-loss records of pro football coaches, identify which ones were black coaches, and compare their win-loss records with the other coaches. There were a handful of black coaches that had opportunities. And guess what? They won more games by a substantial margin than the white counterparts. They went to the playoffs twice as frequently as their white counterparts. And they're the last hired, first fired. And then the name of the report is called Black Coaches in the NFL, Superior Performance, Inferior Opportunities. That's probably the only report that is currently sitting both in the Pro Football Hall of Fame and in the African-American Museum, because that sparked a movement that helped create the Fritz Pollard Alliance, the not-for-profit that I co-founded. And the last page of that report was called the Fair Competition Proposal. And that's where we advocated for what became the Rooney Rule. And the reason it's named after the Rooney Rule, it's named after Dan Rooney, the owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who, in light of this report, wrote a letter to Commissioner Tagliabue, at that time he was commissioner, and said, this is on us, the owners. And they created a diversity committee of five owners and a group of GMs and front office executives. And they sat down every day or every week in New York. They met in New York because they realized how critical it was. And 90 days after our press conference that Johnny and I had announcing this report, they adopted the diverse slate concept. And the lead reporter covering it was a gentleman named Len Shapiro with the Washington Post. And Len calls me up and goes, Cyrus, you want to call it the Mary Cochran Rule or the Cochran Mary Rule? And I just thought for a second, I said, and this came to me, let's call it the Rooney Rule. Why? Because I've learned from my cases that if you make a reform come from within an organization and they have ownership over it, it's more likely to be sustainable. If it was named after me and Johnny, then it would be like this outside rule imposed on them and it would cause resentment. But if it's named after the owner who's so beloved by the other owners, then it has staying power. And guess what? 22 years later, it still has staying power. So I think we made the right choice. Plus, it sounds better anyway.
And you know what? Oh, my goodness. Every time I talk to you, I learn so much more. You talked about our listening audience, which, by the way, are a little bit older than the Gen Z population. I would tell you that, you know, in essence, you kind of like the godfather of diverse slates as well in corporate America, and not just the Rooney Rule. And that was brilliant, right? It was brilliant to make it come from within the sports arena, particularly NFL. But then, you know, when you think about corporate diverse slates, that concept itself, you know, might have benefited from a name like the President's Rule or something like that, or the Colin Powell, right, or the Powell Rule. But anyway, that is fascinating to know. So let's just, you know, just kind of accelerate, you know, the impact of the Rooney Rule. And I would assume, you know, in the first, you know, 5 to 10 years, it had a lot of great impact. What, you know, how effective do you see it today? And do you see the continued teams go back and not just for coaches, but in the back office that they're bringing more diversity to the forefront, diversity leaders to the forefront within those organizations?
Well, I'm sure your audience knows how much inclusive practices and the DEI journey is a journey and has its ups and downs. So the journey of the Rooney Rule of NFL had its ups and downs. It sparked a whole new generation of talent, of extraordinary coaches who were being overlooked because they couldn't even get a chance to get interviewed. And breakthroughs started to happen. You know, Marvin Lewis becomes a very successful coach in Cincinnati Bengals. Lovie Smith becomes a successful coach of Chicago Bears. Doors were opening. And we went from when I first championed the idea of the diverse slates, there were two black head coaches. And then maybe about 4 or 5 years later, it went up to eight. I mean, in 2011, it went up to eight. I'm sorry, 2000. Well, I can't remember. Maybe 2007 went up to 8, and then in 2011, back up to 8. But the cool thing was 10 Super Bowl teams were led by a minority head coach or general manager. So we had Tony Dungy, Lovie Smith, Mike Tomlin, Jim Caldwell, and, you know, the list, Ron Rivera, folks like that. Then we had a general manager, Jerry Reese, 2 times with the Giants, general manager in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Rod Graves of the Cardinals, Ozzie Newsome with the Ravens. So that, you know, changed the dynamic, and it really showed, I think, for the country, the power of diversity. That if you do, you know, the innovations that come with, you know, just opening the door to have more competition. So to make sure you have the best talent. So that was one success. The other, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I was just going to say, and this talent, when you talk about these coaches and general manager, they clearly, you know, were more than qualified. You know, people sometimes confuse the opportunity of having diverse slates is that, oh, we're positioning less qualified people. And I just wanted to emphasize, no, they were definitely qualified, in some cases overqualified. So go ahead and finish your thoughts.
Well, there's so many aspects of it. One, I do believe we did win over the hearts and minds of the NFL public, at least, because the ESPN did a poll of NFL fans 5 years ago on the issues of race. Every issue of race, particularly player protests, complete polarization. But on the Rooney Rule, 70% of NFL fans either supported it or strongly supported it, and only 9% were against it. And why was that? Because when this unfolded, you know, we went to the airwaves, we went on radio shows like this and spoke to the public, and we emphasized this is about fair competition, which speaks to the American spirit. It's not giving anybody anything. It's just giving people a chance to compete and show what they have to offer and a more professionalized process. And guess what? It not only helped black candidates, it helped white candidates who would have otherwise been overlooked. So that's where why I think it really succeeded, you know, in the hearts and minds. But in terms of other aspects, the rule was expanded outside of head coach to GMs, general managers, and then later to front office and club presidents. And guess what? As we sit here now, the first 100 years of pro football history, there was not a single black club president. But then when they expanded the diverse slate concept, now there are 5, including Sandra Douglas Morgan, the first black woman club president with the Las Vegas Raiders. And so breakthroughs happened there. There's right now a record number of black general managers and a record number of minority head coaches, which is 9. But it's fragile. You know, it has its ups and downs. If there are issues the NFL still needs to work on that are very significant, which is that as we sit here now, there's not a single African-American offensive coordinator of the 32 teams. And that post is a key feeder to head coach, and it's 0 for 32. So this is fragile. It's fragile, I would say, you know, but progress is being made.
Yeah. And in corporate America, we would call that, you know, there's no talent in the pipeline. And so, but you know what you said, you're right, it is fragile, it is up and down, and that's the realities. But when you talked about, you know, the Rooney Rule's intent was supporting fair, it was about fair competition. I think we need to go back to that and remind, you know, everyone that's what, you know, diverse slates, affirmative action, that's what these initiatives, this legislation is about. It's about having fair competition and providing those that would not necessarily have had exposure the opportunity to have exposure. So thank you for that clarification.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick commercial break. But before that, you know, right after the commercial, if any of you want to call and take this opportunity and ask Cyrus a great question, call in at 773-763-9278. But we'll be right back with you with Cyrus right after this commercial break, talking about some of the impact on both diverse slates due to affirmative action and some of the Supreme Court rulings. Stay tuned with us. We'll be right back.
At UPMC, we believe care goes beyond our walls and into our communities. That's why we support organizations and individuals who help people prosper by giving them skills and training for employment, including right here at UPMC. Because life-changing is providing people a chance to grow. Learn more at upmc.com/community impact. UPMC, life-changing medicine.
The world is embracing a remote, globalized, and diverse workforce. Is your organization prepared when it comes to understanding all the nuances of diversity? Diversity MBA can help. From an industry-leading journal and web publication highlighting professionals and best practices, to boot camps and conferences featuring noted and accomplished speakers, Diversity MBA is a driving force in diversity, equity, and inclusion education. Check out DiversityMBAMagazine.com and take the first step towards transforming your organization.
Welcome back. Thank you for staying with us on The Inclusive Voice. I'm here with Cyrus May talking about Rooney Rule and some of the great innovations that his organization has had. But Cyrus, before we go into the next question that I want to talk about, I want to shift over real briefly and really kind of talk about, you know, the work that you've done. You know, you've got three organizations. You co-founded, clearly, you know, the Mahey and Scalet law firm in terms of what you do around civil rights litigation. But also, you know, then there's Working Ideal, your consulting company, and then the nonprofit, you know, and supporting legal benefits to DEI leaders. This is amazing, or the alliance with DEI and NFL. But I really, you know, just the three, you know, this trifecta as they come together and provide you the impact. Tell it, you know, I like share a little bit about, you know, how Working Ideal came about, the acronyms, what those mean for you, and the impact that you're making with the combination of the three, or the work that you're doing, let's say the commitment of this work that you're doing. And I'm sorry to break away from our other conversation, but I wanted to make sure we talk about this, because I think the three of them allows you to, you know, have multiple pillars in making impact in some of this change work that you're doing.
Well, I have to say they're all three organizations are all trying to move the country in the same direction. So they all complement each other. Well, Working Ideal, I've been blessed to work with such extraordinary people over my career. And one of them is Pam Kukas, who was the very first lawyer I hired when I went out on my own to start my own law firm. And she wasn't a litigator, but I saw the talent she had because she came from a public policy background with women's rights and other issues. And but I just saw something in her, and she became a great litigator and helped us succeed and win the struggle for black workers at the Coca-Cola company, which, you know, landmark settlement that we had there. And then she went on to get a PhD, be multidisciplinary, and work for the Obama administration and the Department of Labor. And when she was about to leave, she came to me and said, "You don't want to start a consulting company?" I said, "Well, let's do it together." So we did. And in 2017, started Working Ideal, and we've helped across industries and a lot of work for not-for-profits, but Nike, BlackRock, you know, big companies, labor organizations. We've helped people with crises that, you know, they needed to be investigative. But I think a lot of our work has been for giving people really the cutting edge thought leadership on kind of DEI strategies. He helped the city of Cambridge in Massachusetts put out a report of, you know, recruitment, hiring, promotion, to open up their processes to make it more inclusive. We were retained by BlackRock and worked with Eric Holder and Covington to do a racial equity audit. I like the word assessment better, to look at kind of a 360 of everything about the largest asset manager in the world. That, you know, the fruits of that were in a published report, and the institutional shareholders who, you know, were calling for reports like this, there have been maybe 15 of them across different companies at this point, really hold this out as kind of the gold standard of racial equity assessments. So we have that. We do really cool work. And one of our great new discoveries is meeting you, Pam, and discovering Diversity MBA. So we're really excited about opportunities to, you know, co-venture with you and your team as well.
And, you know, and thank you for sharing. I appreciate those kind words. And it's important, I think, for folks to understand to have this legal discipline and understanding and actually have created movements, right? We have the process to create, develop, execute on movements, and then to support and consult companies on how to take legal actionable, you know, direction to make change and do assessments. And I agree with you. I like assessments versus audits. And, you know, to understand where they are, to benchmark where they are, and hopefully be able to make decisions to move forward within their organizations. But so even with this incredible work that you're doing and, you know, that we hope to even forge together in the future, I mean, with this recent pushback, you know, against, you know, I would say against the Rooney Rule, against diverse slates, against presenting fair competition for everyone, the Supreme Court overturning affirmative action. Do you feel that the impact on, you know, on diverse slates and on the Rooney Rule has been set back due to this, or do you feel that, you know, it's criticism of the day and this too shall pass?
I actually think this is a great moment. I think this is a great moment for the DEI movement, because I think we're going to emerge stronger, more revitalized than ever with this kind of DEI backlash. This DeSantis, who's, you know, doing this anti-wokeism stuff in Florida, well, he can't even get his latest anti-woke agenda out of subcommittees in the legislature anymore, because yes, there are articles about it every day, but here's the reason why the DEI movement will remain stronger in corporate America, is that there's a business imperative that is just overwhelming. If you don't stay on your journey, what are you going to do? Alienate all the young people in America? You're going to alienate your workforce, your investors, your shareholders, investors, your business partners. I mean, what we're seeing is the struggle to give birth to a new phase of American democracy, and that's an inclusive democracy. That's it's tumultuous. It's tumultuous, but that's what we're about to do. And so I feel it's going to
reverse. Change is tumultuous, huh? Yeah, and change is tumultuous, yeah. Right? It is.
Right.
And, oh my goodness! And you hit it so right when you talk about. Can you imagine fighting for 30 years to 40 years for a movement for inclusive? I like the way you put it, for an inclusive solution. You know, for giving everyone an opportunity. And then all of a sudden saying, it doesn't exist anymore. We don't want to do this anymore. The level of investment that people have made and corporations And so, you know, what I find amazing, Cyrus, is with all this disruption around DEI, people really don't know that there are many organizations that are steadfast, and Fortune 500 organizations that have big name brands that are steadfast to this, but nobody's talking about it. So the public don't really understand that there's a large group of organizations that are still moving forward in the, with DEI. I mean, they definitely are making sure that they're inclusive of everyone, including white males. They want to make sure allyship and these things are strong. But it's not like, you know, companies are running away from it. I just, that part of it really frustrates me, is that we haven't been able to share that messaging to the public. So thank you, you know, for your candor and honesty. So with that, I would like to, you know, we have a couple minutes left, and I'd like to just, you know, Cyrus, what can, you know, people do? What advice do you have for folks that really believe in an inclusive, you know, workplace, believing in the tenets of respect and caring for, you know, human equity and human rights? What advice do you have, and what you've seen, how people can continue to do, you know, stay true to what they believe, but yet, you know, endure the change that's coming?
Well, I think we have to start with vision, right? And the vision is an inclusive democracy. And I mean, and by that, I mean an inclusive economy, inclusive democracy. So all this effort to have in-group favoritism, which is what the irony, you know, that is what's plaguing corporate America, which is that there's still systemic racial disparities. There's still systemic gender disparities. And as I said on a program the other day with one of the leaders of the other side on this, like, imagine if you get into your house one day and there's a giant elephant in your living room. And then your sibling is out there going crazy, going bonkers because there's a mosquito. Well, this reverse discrimination effort is fighting a mosquito. But if corporate America misses the elephant in the room, they're going to have all kinds of legal exposure, because elephant in the room is we still have huge amounts of pay disparities, promotion disparities on gender and race, as well as other protected groups. So why would you put yourself in a place of legal exposure because some, you know, people, someone's going bonkers about something that is, you know, really on the margins? Like, there's no evidence of systemic reverse discrimination in any company in the country. Not one. And I have one of the best seats in the house because I see companies from across industries, and I've seen their data across industries, across decades of time, as both a litigator and as a consultant. So there's no evidence of the problem being DEI. The problem is you got to get DEI stronger to help you deal with the race and gender and other disparities that are happening.
Well, you know, thank you. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for that. Let me just ask you real quickly, if people want to learn more about Working Ideal, where can they go, Cyrus?
Sure. Just workingideal.com. You'll see a lot of amazing people there that work with us. We multidisciplinary, and, you know, blessed with so much talent to help solve these complex, challenges that we have.
Great. And Working Ideal is all one word, IDEAL. So we want to thank Cyrus May here for being with us this morning. Oh, my goodness, what an incredible trailblazer. And with that, we'll all be with you next week. Thank you for listening to us. I'm Pam McElvin, your host, an inclusive voice. Here with me today, Cyrus May here, the founder and principal of Mayhear & Scalet Law Firm. So we'll be with you next week. Stay tuned with us. And thank you for joining us.